In my mind, I can't push anything out there without rereading it 10 times over. And maybe that's why I'm so slow.
It's time for Grow the Dream.
And Josh's jingles. Rod's back.
I'm back.
Hey, Rod.
Today, we're going to be talking about one of the worst things.
Oh, no.
That you might be dealing with. It could be slowing you down.
It could be fatal. Back.
All of that and more next.
Oftentimes, it's the ones that are successful loved what they did so they could persevere when it got really tough. And the ones that didn't love it, quit.
I learned many great lessons from my father, not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Welcome to the most indispensable show for people doing the hard work of growing your business. It's the marketing podcast by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Welcome to Grow the Dream.
All right, welcome to Grow the Dream, episode number 26.
Grow the Dream.
We were expecting a jingle from Josh. Oh, yeah. From Josh's jingles.
That was disappointing. Okay.
Hold on. Grow the Dream.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I got.
I wasn't really feeling it, but that's okay.
you can't hit a home run every Monday.
No, you can't.
That's right, and that's on topic with our show today, actually.
Oh, that's right.
What do you know?
Way to blunder into it.
I can't be a perfect singer every time.
No, you can't. The pursuit of perfection is an ill... I don't know where I was
conceived
going with that.
Pursuit.
Thank you for finishing my sentence.
Who wrote
hey,
that?
Rod, it's good having you back, man.
Glad to be here.
We missed you last week.
I didn't miss you at all.
Oh, gosh. You too. I don't know.
I'm just ignoring the kid.
Yes, apparently. So for those of you who this might be your first episode of Grow the Dream.
Maybe your last.
What's wrong with these guys?
David Johnson here with my good friends Rod Thompson, who is, and we haven't said this in a while, so you guys gotta let me do this, a 30-year veteran journalist who joined the other side and now helps businesses and other folks achieve messaging and publicity success.
Happiness. Right.
Yes.
Is that a good way of summarizing?
No, that is good. Then, yeah, other folks being politicians.
I wasn't going to pick
on
them.
That's
I mean, that's a dirty word.
It is a dirty word. Yeah. Probably right.
And, hey, and Josh Muccio.
How long has it been since we've been together?
Famous for Josh's jingles.
Josh's
jingles.
And the pitch.
Yeah.
I was going to say the voice, but
now we have a way to describe me. I'm the host and founder of The Pitch.
That's right. He's the host of The Pitch.
I don't normally talk that low in The Pitch.
The podcast that's taking the world by storm. It's like Shark Tank for
Shark Tank. Here we come.
Yeah, but for podcasting and for like new, not just Silicon Valley startup. I don't know why, but I have Silicon Valley and The Pitch like permanently attached in my brain to one another.
Yeah, well, we're kind of
makes sense, really.
Very, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so it's fair enough. So
this is the first time we've been together in a room for about a month now. I
know, yeah, because I was gone and I was virtual on the show. And then Rod, we missed you last week. I'm glad you're feeling better.
I was on my deathbed, but I'm off it now.
Well, you know, Josh had you placed in an entirely different part of the house.
Yeah. The way I described what was going on with you was...
It was inappropriate. Anyway, so...
I'm shocked. Truly, truly shocked.
But we kind of nerded out last week, the two of the
I heard the show.
It was unrestrained.
we had no barriers to geekdom. Right. And so we spent...
Right. So I want to, first of all, issue a full apology to our listeners
for not being here and restraining us.
For last week's show that was a pure geek festival.
It was fun, though. We talked about techie stuff, and we don't always get to do that.
No. You know.
Oh, we always do that. We just don't always devote a whole show to it.
But we also try to spend our time, especially as it relates to growing businesses, we try to spend our time making this stuff make sense and kind of demystifying it.
Right.
Yeah, the businesses.
We did talk about marketing last week. We talked about whether you should have a mobile app, and we talked about influencer strategies.
Methinks thou doth protest too much.
Because, you know, I feel like it's warranted. I don't think it's too much.
What if we made a show where you weren't allowed to say the word marketing? You had to come up with new words to describe
it. Okay, I have a fun variation on that. I have a fun variation on that. I have a friend who, you know what's always been said, that when you're in a sales meeting and you're selling something, right? So I mean, we can all relate to this. We've all been in sales calls.
Is there another monkey in this story?
The more questions you ask, the more likely you are to be successful, right? Because when you ask questions...
Really? Tell me more.
Right, exactly. So a friend of mine decided to try this strategy on an online sales letter. And so he wrote an entire sales letter, like a full-length, full-on pitch.
All questions?
Every sentence ended in a question mark. There was not a single statement in
the
pile.
That sounds like it would be horrible to read.
It wasn't. It was brilliant. It was really phenomenally done.
Well, because you can sort of answer questions with questions, too. And you can really lead the witness with a lot of questions.
Well, and
that's the key.
Yeah, that is the key. Because you're trying to ask the right question. You know, right. Just any question doesn't do it. But the right question. But he built.
Wasn't that the Socrates way of teaching?
A Socratic method, absolutely.
Yeah, so, yeah. Right.
Well, you do you know him?
Oh man, I don't.
The wisdom of the ages ignores another comment from the kid.
I have not had enough caffeine yet to be that fast. I gotta hand it to you, Josh. That was a good one, man. I just wasn't even expecting that.
So I'm not gonna lie, I didn't like the first cup
of coffee.
Yeah.
Okay, David and I get this one because I made this one stronger.
No. I'm gonna. Maybe I will like it more.
This is the brew of the day. It's actually Sumatra from Starbucks because. This week when I went to go buy my normal Verona, which I used to stock up at home, the store was out. Which, you know, that happens sometimes with Verona.
You know, I can pour this. You're having some trouble there.
Yeah, I can't
reach it. If only our listeners could see what was going on.
Oh, I know.
The amount of coffee and the microphones and the wires and the computers, and no disaster has befallen us yet.
Yeah, except that we've burned 5 minutes and haven't actually said anything useful. So I don't know if that's a disaster yet or not.
It's my favorite part of the show.
Okay. So we do need a new brew.
Useless Josh.
So yeah, let's see how this one turns out because, Rod, you did kind of overgrind and oversteep. So we'll see.
It's called making a good cup of coffee, David.
I don't complain. I like it. I don't mind chewing my coffee.
So I have while you chew your coffee, I'm gonna bring up the topic of the day.
Bring it up, Josh.
I was reading this post by this gentleman named Mark Suster.
Just do it well, will you?
Read it well?
Yeah, do it perfectly.
Okay, so here's the whole premise of the article. Somebody asked him, "How the hell does he prioritize work, blog, and find balance?" Can I say that? So, the guy's like blogs all the time. He's crazy. And
how do you spell his name
again? Capitalist.
It's Suster.
Yeah, thank you.
Actually, I know who he is.
Like, he's like everywhere, right? And you always wonder, like, how do these people do this and still live normal lives and, like, you know, keep their wives and families happy? I wonder these things. I know Rod's figured it out by now. No comment. So, anyway, so somebody asked him, he talks about it. And like the whole kind of bullet point, if you were to wrap it up in one thing, is that he sits down at night, he starts writing, and then he finishes. And then the other side of it is that he doesn't proofread his stuff anymore. And his argument is that once you hit 10,000 hours in anything, you become really, really good at it.
But the I've heard that theory before.
Kicked around for a few years.
I can think of a few. Yeah. Maybe they're outliers, but I can think of a few exceptions.
And I guess you could spend 3 hours writing one post and push that out there. But maybe his argument is 3 hours spent writing 10 posts is better than 3 hours spent writing one post.
So I'm looking at his site right now, bothsidesofthetable.com.
Mm-hmm. He leaves, like, yeah, he doesn't proofread stuff. People leave comments about it not being proofread and stuff. But he doesn't worry about it. He just pushes publish. So in the evening, he literally spends 20 minutes and pushes out a blog post because he's gotten so good at it. But, I mean, in my mind, I can't push anything out there without rereading it 10 times over. And maybe that's why I'm so slow.
Google has indexed 1,230 pages on the bothsidesofthetable.com site. I don't know how long the site's been in existence, but that's an impressive number.
Oh, is it? I was like, what's the...
Well, 1,230, if those are all blog posts, I mean, it's his blog.
Yeah. He's been doing it for a while. So,
well,
and I know that
productive.
In the beginning, he said he was proofreading everything. And then one point in time, he said, like, I have a life to live. I want a blog too. But the idea being the main premise and what you're trying to say is going to come through whether there's some typos or not. And I know Rod disagrees. Can't stand typos.
Okay, I'm trying to reverse engineer this for a sec, and then you can talk about typos.
That's fine.
Bought the domain in 2009 in May. So it's 6 years, 1,200 blog posts. So we could do the math. That's a lot of blog posts.
That's a lot of blog posts.
That's one every 3 days, one every 4 days.
That's 200 a year.
Nobody's
right?
actually doing the math.
So 200 a year is guess. Actually that's more than every other day.
Yeah, I mean it's slightly pretty. More. It's yeah. pretty significant.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, right. one a day would be 2,100 blog posts, almost 2,200 blog posts.
Yeah.
So, you know, 1,200, that's, yeah, it's a little better than one every other day. So, but yeah, typos.
Well, I mean, I understand what he's saying, and I do generally agree with the concept that, you know, 10,000 hours of practice is how you become a master of something. And so maybe he can get away with it, but that is something that I would highly encourage our listeners not to do if they're blogging. I think that you hurt your credibility on what you're blogging about if you have even simple typos. Typos are one level of credibility damage. You know, having TEH for the and that sort of thing suggests that you didn't take the blog seriously. So why should a reader take the blog seriously? I'm not, you know, why, if you're not even going to take the time to read it over to make sure that you have basic words spelled right, then how do I know that the basic content is even worth taking my time to read? So that's one level.
Here's something else I can bring up. Maybe you know this, David, but like if you have comments that have typos in it on your website, things yeah. like that, you aren't supposed to correct them. Like
correct.
The Google encouraged thing is don't correct that stuff. Because
I don't edit comments at all unless right. I'm removing them.
Right. But I mean, even in your content, it's like it's almost like Google encourages errors because or like they like it because it's a human thing to do. And they're trying to sort out between spam
well,
and bots
okay,
and all
yeah,
that kind
I,
of stuff.
I get that, but I get more
not that you
typos
purposely.
And, yeah, bots typos, bots but. Produce more typos, in my opinion, than humans do. If you have ever seen like these you know spam generated content.
Oh, I have
pieces.
No idea.
Yeah. But what you're from an SEO standpoint, actually, it's really smart to have some misspellings because
take that, Rod.
Well, no. I'm not talking about a blog post,
okay.
but I am talking wow. about in like pages that you want to be indexed because.
What about I want
people?
My blog post
people
to be
may
indexed.
Misspell the name of your product,
right.
the name of your company.
That's,
the name
a,
of your,
oh, yeah. that's right. a strategy. There.
Yeah. That's
sure.
But typos are a
that.
Different
typo,
matter.
Typos is a strategy.
Something that yeah, something that reveals that you are either lacking in training or intelligence or care
right.
or concern. I think those are negatives. But you know what? That's easily overcome.
But
we all have in our browsers these days. I mean, Chrome and Firefox have the spell checkers built in. WordPress has a spell checking tool. And in fact, if you activate Jetpack, which is the WordPress.com connection between your WordPress site and the you know the commercial version of WordPress, they've got something called After the Deadline that checks for grammar
right.
And like all sorts of other factors. So there really is not much of an excuse to allow real typos through. I mean, you know, I mean, sure, you could use the wrong legitimate word and that would get through there.
Right. And I mean, if you spell T-H-E-I-R, T-H-E-R-E,
exactly.
that sort of thing, I don't know if their grammar checker would
well, yeah,
it, catch that or not.
To some degree, but
I don't know. I wouldn't put your faith in
yeah,
that.
So
it can't
obviously
be 100%.
Tools. I mean,
yeah.
But I mean, even the tools take time or having somebody proofread your stuff take time. This guy doesn't do either.
All right. So, I don't buy that he doesn't have a spell checker. I don't know. Maybe
he just pushes publish. He writes a. I mean, he writes publishes posts
right,
in 20
but
minutes.
I'm calling BS on that one. But okay.
Even if it's not though, let's just accept it on the face of it. He's
yeah.
an outlier there. That is he is almost would be the exception to prove the rule because if he's written this many, if he's done this many blogs, most people are not going to be blogging that frequently. Their life isn't blogging. You know,
well,
their life is
your,
their business or whatnot.
Yeah, but
so,
isn't that your point, Josh? Is like, because it's not his life, he just does it without spending a lot of time on it.
Yeah, and I think we're really, really investing, obviously, in this specific micro scenario. But I think the bottom line is that we're all super, super perfectionist. I know I am. And it holds me back.
So now
at
you're
times,
going to the other side of the spectrum, right? So his side is, look, you just whip it out there and boom, be done with it. But the opposite end of that is where you sweat and sweat and sweat over it for hours on end and to the point where you can almost freeze yourself up to where you can't push publish, to where you can't get it done. And you've got to get to that point where there's a point where you have to arrive at when you're writing anything, when you say, it's good enough, I've got to move on. Because you can always feel like I can make it a little bit better. I want to
yeah.
go back. I want to read that paragraph one more time. I want to check that one more time. Maybe there's one more source I can include, and you will get to the point where you'll never actually even get it out.
I think you're kind of an outlier because you're a PR guy.
Sure.
So I think the normal people...
And an editor.
And an
author.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. I don't know, 30 years. Okay, so...
3 books.
Yeah, that's right.
I love you, Rod, but you're
just throwing out the creds here.
Yeah, I got nothing. I just realized a few minutes ago, I probably haven't spent 10,000 hours doing anything. I mean, other than
maybe
like sleeping.
Have you been alive 10,000 hours?
Okay, sleeping, other things. But like any skill, I don't know. So maybe I'm useless.
Well, I think
tee it up that bad.
No. I think the point you're trying to bring up, Josh, is a good one.
What point am I bringing up?
Well, I mean, I think what I'm hearing you say is that if you're a business owner, maybe a part of a small business marketing team, there are probably some things that you aren't doing right now that you should just do because of this perfectionism.
Absolutely.
Or maybe it's not just like, because I think we have 3 perfectionists at this table, actually.
Yeah.
I think we're all that way. But I think that not all of our listeners are. Maybe it's not just perfectionism. Maybe it's just that you know somebody's going to come behind you and look over your shoulder and say, you know, you could have done that better than you did.
But I think even the internet makes people who are not perfectionists kind of turns them into one because you're like, oh, the whole world is going to see this when in reality,
hopefully.
Maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, in reality, nobody really cares. But no, I'm kidding.
But like blog, I mean, for me, I wouldn't write blog posts because I would spend so much time critiquing myself, looking at how I was going to appear in public when I should have just pushed the publish button the hour before. And my argument is, Rod, by the time you've got to the point where you're like, I'm spending too much time on this, you've spent way too much time on it. And by the time you realize it, it's too late. The problem's already...
This is why I said there's
two
extremes, and you don't want to be at either extreme.
So I have a fun story. I was on stage one time at a conference, and I used this quote, which I've used for years and couldn't have told you where it came from. And I only knew the beginning of the quote, so I just used the part that I had. And we were on this very topic, because we were explaining. I was in a room full of business owners, and we got people who are just trying to figure out what to do with digital marketing. You know, what do they do for SEO? What do they do for social media? And I said, you know, there are some things I'm going to show you today. And the fact of the matter is, you're not going to be an expert at them when you start. You just got to go. And so I used the quote. And the quote is like, anything worth doing is worth doing poorly.
That's right.
But Tom Ziegler was in the room. Tom was on our show here, I don't know, a couple months ago. Tom Ziegler was in the room and he stopped me. Okay, now I'm on stage in front of, I don't know, couple hundred business owners, and Tom says, you know, that's a Zig quote.
Sure he did.
And I'm like, okay, no, I didn't remember that. So he finished it for me. And of course, the way Zig said the quote was, anything worth doing is worth doing poorly until you learn to do it well. And that's the deal.
That's the key.
You've got to start. You've got to get out there and get going with it, because the improvement in your skills comes from the doing of it.
Yeah.
And you just have to accept, like I had a friend that used to say, you can't get there from not here.
Right.
Right? You can't start out from somewhere other than where you are.
Well, look, it's like the old saying that every journey begins with one footstep.
Right.
You know, you got to take one step. You got
to
take and then
the journey
step,
to Mordor,
then,
you know?
And then another step. That's right. And pretty soon,
you know, Frodo.
Yes. Yes, Ring, Gollum, we got it. Yeah. Got it.
Oh, that's funny. It was Sun Tzu that said that, wasn't it? I mean, I thought it was like an ancient Chinese.
And Zig, and I mean, you brought up Zig. Zig's a great guy. So if you're wanting to, I don't know, how would you describe Zig? Just like personal life growth and like
oh, would you all, describe, I mean, personal just, development.
He was like the original life hacker.
I know he was like a sales kind of coach in the beginning, but he's become quite legendary from that. And
absolutely. You know, not only just personal development and sales training, but any kind of motivation. And by the way, the Ziegler organization now has opened up their vault again. So you can buy a membership and just, it's cheap. It's like $10 a month or something. You can listen to something every day if you wanted to get a little.
Awesome.
Oh, it's killer. I mean, it's really good stuff.
So if the Grow the Dream is not bringing you enough stuff, go check out Zig.
There you go.
Hey, back to the topic. What you were talking about, though, if you can't start unless you without you know taking one step. I was just talking to somebody here recently about that and people who want to become entrepreneurs, and we all know the people who, you know, tell us about what they're gonna do. They get really really excited about something. They talk to 1,500 people. They talk about the idea. They try to explore the business plan. They plan 5-10 years in advance. And then they never actually start doing anything because then they think, oh, well, what if I just did this? They, you know, that bright, shiny object syndrome. But they're worse off than us business people because they haven't even started in the first place.
So I think that this is an excellent example, because when I was the editor of the Business Review for those years, I cannot tell you how many stories we did on people who started the business that they always wanted to start because they were laid off. They lost their job.
Yeah.
They were
exactly.
forced into it. They realized, you know, they never would have actually started that business if they hadn't been forced into it. And then they look back after, you know, a few years usually of great turmoil in their lives, because starting a business, losing a job, starting a business, 2 points of turmoil right there. You know, but they look back and they say that best thing that ever happened was losing that job so that I could be forced to start the business. Yeah, exactly it is. But your story, it's repeated over and over and over. But I think the lesson that can be learned there is don't wait. Don't do something on the side forever that is your dream to do, waiting for just the right opportunity until you've perfected everything to start it, because you will never start it.
There's never the right opportunity. You can't plan for how much you will love it or be passionate about it ahead of time. The only way to really figure out what you love doing is start doing a bunch of different stuff. People get mad at me because they're like, dude, Josh, how many things are you going to do? Why don't you just stick to something? Gosh dang it. And I'm like, well, I'm figuring it out.
Does Lisa need counseling?
No. Lisa's awesome. My wife is awesome.
I'm teasing. You know, being married to one of us is not an easy thing. You know, I'm talking real stuff.
I heard my wife say amen.
Yeah. Well, she and Jill should get together, I think.
Oh, man.
You know, maybe Lisa and,
or maybe they shouldn't.
Yeah, maybe not. That might be bad for us. But no, you're right. I think that this applies not just on the big scale, right? Because I mean, at the moment, we're talking about whether
big
you
visions,
start
dreams.
your business. But, you know, whether you're launching a product or whether you're just simply trying to execute on a marketing tactic that we've shared here on the show,
right.
Yeah.
These are things that you know, you have to just get over yourself.
Right. Do it once, do it poorly, waste some money, feel like you sucked, and then try again.
Every one of those is a learning opportunity. And every time you learn something, you get better at it.
Well, and stop reading 500 blog posts and thinking that when you know enough, have read about the subject, then you'll be good enough to start. No.
It's true. Some of those people might be wrong.
Read a blog post.
Yeah.
Try to implement. Read another blog post. You don't need to do 500 hours of research before starting.
No, it's true. So perfectionism can be a deadly thing.
How do you manage that in your team?
I haven't thought about
become good at executing because their jobs require it.
You know, here's one thing that I can say as a leader that's a smart thing to do is foster an environment where action is rewarded, even if it needs to be fine-tuned.
How do you do that with remote teams that live in Slack?
I feel like that's on a poster with ocean waves rolling in or something.
Like a successory.
Exactly.
I'm going to start a new line of Grow the Dreameries.
Uh-huh.
No.
That sounds like a brewery.
Yeah. Well, that might be fun too.
Yeah.
We provide feedback. We have a team of writers, like, so they're submitting. Hey, Rod, you've managed writers. They submit content to us. We edit it. We approve it. We send it to the clients. You know, sometimes the clients hate it. I mean, you know, we just settled a long time ago. There isn't a way to do any of this perfectly. And we have an environment where testing new things is rewarded. I was actually on a webinar this week listening to a guy talk about conversion rate optimization. And they were talking about including left field ideas. And he pulled in this set of like six options and he polled the audience on the webinar. Which one do you think won? In other words, which one of these six designs do you think was the one that the visitors to the website ultimately clicked on more or signed up more? And the one in this particular case was truly the left field idea. I mean, if you looked at all of them, as a guy who's spent a long time doing conversion rate optimization and looking at web forms and seeing which ones, my opinion was that it was not going to be successful.
And it won out.
And it won, like, it was like an 80% lift.
Wow.
And it was insane. But that's the thing, is that, you know what? There's no answer to what is the right way to do a lot of the stuff we're talking about on the show. The right answer is you got to test it, and you got to put it out there, and that means you're going to put out some things that you might later go, probably won't do that again.
I think one potential solution in the armory of solutions for getting past perfectionism is to set a drop-dead deadline for yourself. I mean, one that you'll adhere to.
Drop dead deadline.
Yep. That's a.
Dun, dun, dun.
I guess that's a newspaper phrase to a degree and a publication phrase, because there's deadlines and there's drop dead deadlines, ones that absolutely can't be moved because the whole.
The press is actually running
the
already.
The press is tied up. And, yeah,
We're going to print in 5 minutes.
Hold the presses. Yeah, that doesn't really work in real life.
Yeah.
Hold the digital presses.
The point is, you know, you make a deadline and say, this is, I'm going to publish this by 9 o'clock. And that's it. And stick to that deadline, period.
I had a friend
that show that comes on at 9 and you're going to watch.
Exactly. See, even if it means sweats starting to pop out on your forehead at 5 to 9, just stick to that deadline.
See, I am masterful at getting around my own deadlines, though.
No, you can't do that.
Yeah, I can. You're really good at it.
You're masterful.
So here's,
see, that's because you're your own boss.
Yeah, that's true. But here's a different version of that idea that a
Jill
friend
sets the deadline.
No. That's even worse.
Why did this was a stupid deadline?
She can never listen to this show now. Anyway, no, it's not that it's worse because it's her. It's worse because I know what's real. You know. So here's what a friend of mine said instead of making a deadline.
I have to tell you, you don't know what's real.
No. Oh, thanks, Josh. You're just winning me all sorts of points here. Thankfully, she's not subscribed to the show. But anyway, his version was, he called it light the fuse. And so his way of thinking about this was, you put something out there that is going to happen no matter what. So, like, maybe you bought an ad and the traffic is going to start to show up on such and such a day.
Or nice.
You did something that you can't actually reverse. You know, you've told people or you've included other people.
You sent an email to Rod that says, we're launching this product in this time.
So that's essentially a deadline you've set.
But it's a real deadline.
Right.
In other words, it's not.
Because it's external. It's not within your team or your family.
You lit a fuse. Yeah. Yes. It's going to go off at the end of this fuse no matter what. So you'll either be whatever stage of readiness it's in, that's what's going to happen.
Right.
And we've had stuff launched that way.
Half-baked?
Well, I had a situation a couple years ago where a client of ours bought an ad that he spent a lot of money on, and it was a really high visibility
and
ad.
It sucked.
Started to produce a ton of traffic, and the stuff wasn't ready. The landing page wasn't there, the opt-in forms and stuff. And so 5 a.m., I woke up and got it done. Because the email blast was going out at like 5:30, and I got up at 5 o'clock and finished. I mean, a lot of pieces were in motion, but it just wasn't. But that was the kind of thing. Like, there were so many things in my week, I couldn't have done anything differently. That was just the time I had to do it, And so anyway, sometimes that works, but that's not a deadline. That's a crisis.
Right. I think it's healthier to not have to operate in a crisis environment when at all possible.
Sure.
Not that you're familiar with that, but just trust me, it's better if at all possible.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back in reality. Yes. No, I'm kidding.
But I think that the deadline thing, whether you have to set it externally, whether you have to have somebody else hold you accountable, whatever it is, I think that that is one of the elements that can help you get past the perfectionism challenge.
My brother joined a group that was intended to hold people accountable for actions. And so what you would do is you would make a commitment. No, it was a group of business people. It was just like an informal mastermind type group where they met on the phone once a week.
Gotcha.
And but what they did was they said, okay, what's your big commitment for this week? And they would make a commitment. And if you didn't do it, you had to pay everybody in the group $50.
That's awesome.
That's another way to do it.
Or not come back.
Or never show up again. But you had to show up because you might get $50 from somebody. Like,
somebody else might not come through.
The one paying.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kidding, but I don't know how the group worked. That was just one of the dynamics that he told me about, which I thought was kind of cool. Actually, that's a whole different way to do it.
Well, so this brings us back to the point, though, that you need to make things happen. You can't keep waiting. You can't even blame your own perfectionism. I think one problem that a lot of us has, and this might maybe get a little too psychological, is that we blame our personalities for not being able to do something. Well, I'm just this way. Well, I'm just a perfectionist. Or, well, I'm just, you really got to get past whatever the ellipsis is, that's following the ellipsis there. You need to get past that and say, it doesn't matter. I need to get started on this. I'm going to do this. Or you are never actually going to get the chance to fulfill your dreams.
Perfectionism is really just insecurity.
Maybe.
Oh, in that case, I don't feel like a perfectionist.
Yeah, I'm confident.
Yeah,
I'm not a perfectionist.
Rod's not insecure.
I am not insecure.
Yeah, you're still processing, I can tell.
I'm thinking about that one. I might noodle on that one. I don't know. I might tweet about it later. We'll see.
Okay. Yeah, think about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think in a lot of cases that's probably true. Some of it could just be, though, that, you know, you've invested a lot in your brand. You've put a lot of work into it, and you don't want to tarnish it in some way, you know, with something that you feel like is less than what would live up to the standards that you've set.
Sure.
But that could just be a lot of psychobabble talk that's hiding insecurity. I don't know.
Yeah.
Which itself is psychobabble.
But I think, too, like you edit things
we
over.
We know where Rod landed on that one.
Dirty looks don't show on a podcast, Josh. Yeah. Just saying. Yeah.
I just think you edit these things to death to the point where
it
loses its
vibrance.
Like humanity.
Our podcast. You know, we edit the daylights out of this.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that people can tell.
I mean, I think you have to write as a human, and I know this kind of gets back to this, but I think you should be willing to put out content that isn't perfect. And
You have to, because no content is ever perfect.
So that, less than your standard of perfect.
Well, you don't know what my standard is.
I'm pretty sure it's good.
Okay, I'll live with that.
You're a 30-year press PR veteran, whatever you are.
Journalist.
Thank you.
Writer. And author.
There he goes again. He's not insecure.
Well, it's just you're adding my territory and kind of explaining to me how we do it. And so I'm just saying, yeah. But what you're saying, really, there's real truth to it. That you can't wait for it to be perfect. You can't wait for it to be, okay, this is Tom Clancy now. All right, finally I can publish it. Because you're never going to be writing Tom Clancy. There's only one of him. You got to write real. You got to write who you are. Be who you are. Write what you know about. Right. Be confident about what you're talking about. Write with authority. Write with confidence. And then publish the thing.
Well, and like for me, I can't be thinking, what would Rod think of this?
No,
I have to say,
that I would be in your head
Rod.
The whole time.
I don't care what he thinks of this.
Josh
I'm
does
push
not
publish.
Want Rod in his head.
So I had a mentor a number of years ago that put it like this. She said, you know what? If you're going to step out into some of these areas, and some of it involved kind of what we're talking about today in a great degree, she said one of the first things that you have to do is just get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because you're going to live uncomfortable.
True.
As an entrepreneur.
Right.
As somebody who, even as a content marketer, you're going to put stuff out there and you're going to go, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it's good or not, you know? And all creative types know that feeling. I don't know if it's good or not.
Right.
You just don't know.
Right.
And, you know, and sometimes you can't listen to the critics either because,
Honestly, so I'm working on this product right now, which is it's a 12 or 13 step thing that just working on it.
Oh, you can say the title of it.
Rod's got a 12 step program.
Get some anticipation built for this.
Well, the working title is a blogging guide for the busy person. Blogging guide for the busy person.
I'm busy.
Okay. Right. Exactly. And so this might be good for you.
and I don't currently
but
blog,
the point
so.
Is while I've been working on it is on and off I've thought this is terrible, this stinks, this is awful, and then I don't care, this is pretty good, this is all right, and then I'll be back to, well, this is no good, this isn't going to be helpful to anybody, you know, and so but yeah, I
depends
keep plowing
on what mood
through
are you
it
in.
I mean, yeah, pretty much I'm at 2500 words and it now, so you know, you keep plowing through with it, you keep doing it, and you get kind of past your own insecurities, they might be,
yeah, well. Actually, you just brought it up because I wanted to bring this. I'm surprised you guys didn't already. But the whole idea of long form content is better than short. And a lot of marketers like Neil Patel,
that's a
they
big
say,
discussion.
Like, don't spend a bunch. So spend a month building some epic content and, you know, like really critique the heck out of it. And then spend another month or two promoting the crap out of that one piece of content.
Well, that's actually the strategy on what I'm doing right here.
And don't waste time on the little posts.
So Neil posts at least once a week. So I don't buy that strategy from him. But what I do know...
but they are long form for the most part.
He does. He creates long form copy.
And I know he has a bunch of people working for him. So perhaps the people working for him are working up for it a month.
Well, maybe. I don't know. But you know. I do know that... Rod, you ran across something related to long form this week.
Right.
Blog posts.
Right. I was listening to actually Convince and Convert podcast. And they had a guest on there...
Is that Jay Baer's podcast?
It is. Yep. Who is the lady who is the head of the Canva blogging. And she was talking about the value of the long post. And when they did a deep dive into their analytics numbers, they found that the long posts were dramatically outperforming the shorter posts. So they are now at a point where they don't post anything shorter than 2,000 words. They don't do any blog posts less than 2,000 words. They really spend the time. They do good posts. They put out good quality content. And they're long form.
So this was...
And this is counterintuitive, isn't it, to a lot of our culture and Twitter feeds and et cetera, a long-form post doing better.
But I feel at the same time, like, they got traction on their blog because they were publishing short stuff regularly. Well, now they're big and they have a team, so then they can switch to this different mindset. I don't think that small businesses and people, if they're just starting out, should do one blog post every 3 months.
No, I agree with that.
No. You have to do something more often. But I think even it's Peg Fitzpatrick. Does that sound right? From head of social strategy at Canva.
I was driving when I was listening to it.
Okay. So. All right. So she was on Social Pros.
Okay.
Why Canva is taking over visual social media. Does that sound like the episode you're listening to?
No, it doesn't sound like it.
Okay. So this might be the wrong episode. So I'm just Googling while we're talking. But anyway, so Peg Fitzpatrick is potentially an outlier in that sense. But I agree. You got to crank out content more frequently. And I think this gets back to something Joe Chernoff was talking about. Remember when he was on and he was talking about how that you have your content that ends up being accretive rather than decaying?
Yeah.
And I think that this is kind of what we're saying. I would imagine that length is one of the factors. We talked about whether it was evergreen or not.
So the long form is creative.
Potentially. But see, here's the thing. Long form, just for the sake of being long, long if it continues to be useful as you read it.
Okay, so one of the key analytics on it was shareability. Yeah. That the long form ones were far more popular shared items than the shorter ones were.
And that was Neil Patel's experience as well with his content, was that the longer posts ended up being shared more often. But I think that it largely depends on your audience and who you're serving and how you serve them. In other words, look, I get an email from Neil Patel once a week.
Yeah.
The topics are usually enticing. How often do I actually read them? Very infrequently, because I don't have time for Patel post once a week. I mean, he writes long, several thousand word posts.
Yeah.
But
ain't nobody got time for that.
If I'm Googling something and there's a Neil Patel result, I know that I can expect
something
definitive,
awesome,
authoritative,
sure,
useful content in that post. And so... But there again, so which audience are you trying to serve? Are you trying to serve the Google audience that's going to stumble into your stuff and go, wow, this is exactly what I've been looking for. I'm going to use it. I'm going to share it. I'm going to refer people to it. Or are you trying to cultivate a consistent, engaged following from people that you're going to...
What about both? I mean, is that not an objective?
Well, my argument
both
is...
Both being an objective?
My argument is if both is your objective, then I'm not sure long form every time is a smart move.
Okay.
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think you can.
And I think Josh is right when we talk about, you know, smaller businesses starting off blogs or young blogs, and you're just one person doing it. The long form only probably is not the route to go. But it's something to consider building towards. And if you've been blogging for a while, and if you're, you know, listening, and you're part of a small marketing team, maybe at a company, you might want to consider the long form and looking into it, and you know, do the analytics like they did. I want to give the lady name or credit here. Oh boy, Andriana Spinatoan.
Oh, so it wasn't Peg Fitzpatrick.
It wasn't at all.
Oh gosh. But sorry about that.
Yeah. But that, and it was on, and it was actually focused on shareability.
Fascinating.
The long form. So, but I think that you can, and maybe there's value, and analytics is important here. You can gauge your, you know, how your blog does. You can gauge your headlines. You can gauge the length. You can gauge the shareability. There's so much you can do with analytics to determine that. But there might be value in doing both.
Well, I think so. And I think that ultimately it comes down to what you have the ability to execute on and what's going to serve your audience well. And probably I have those backwards. You wouldn't want to start with the audience. I can tell you this. Often I write long form blog posts because I don't have time to write short ones. And that's the way that I approach it. Like, I can sit down and crank out a 2,000 word blog post in an hour and not even think twice about it. But if I were going to try to pare it down, I would have to take time.
Yeah.
That's the way I. But that's me.
But that's going to be the
is
truth for a lot of
good
people.
Good content, though.
Well, I mean,
so let's talk about that for a moment, because that's important.
Maybe not.
Because when we're talking about people who
there's
are
David
in
Rambling
their company,
again.
In their company, they or in their industry, they're experts in their industry, right? So they have an awful lot of information in their head, and they can blog about things a lot. So the analogy for me is are the reporters that would work for me that had done a lot of research on a story. They've interviewed a ton of people. They've done all the research, and then they do notebook dump. notebooks are what they used to use with pen and paper, and they would take notes on it that way. So
notebook dump. You had to carry them around.
I know, it's awful. Yeah.
Tuning you out.
but they do notebook dump, and the 2,000 words is easy. What's hard is if you have a 1,200-word space that it needed to fit in, and it took them forever to narrow that thing down from 2,000 to 1,200. And so the same concept.
Yeah, I don't have that problem.
But the same concept applies. Well, because at this point so far yet, you're not an expert in an industry. But if somebody's
I haven't spent the 10,000 hours, right?
Yeah. Right, but I'm saying seriously, if somebody is, whatever it is, if it's widgets and they've been doing it for 25 years and they know their industry inside and out, they might have a hard time actually writing a short blog post.
Yeah. I told a client this week, you know, what you need to do is start, lay out all the topics and the content that you want to lay out to cover this thing well and to feel like you've done it justice.
Are you talking about an outline?
And then, no, I'm talking about writing it. Like,
oh.
You know, and it's going to be, what, 3,000, 5,000 words or whatever it is. Split it into 4 or 5, 10 or chunks, however many it takes. Mm-hmm. And now you got part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then you got, you know, publish them once a week or every 3 days or whatever it is. And now you have consistent content over a period of time. So, and then you can link to them when you got intrasite links. So I think we've covered a lot of ground today. I'm not sure about what though.
I think the point is get started.
Absolutely.
Do not delay waiting for the perfect product result blog decision.
And then we fell into it in this interview talking about what's the best strategy and what, and the bottom line is you aren't going to know the best strategy. You just need to start pushing publish.
Get started.
Even if you think it sucks.
Push publish.
Push publish.
Get it started.
All right, and that's what I think we should do with this episode is push publish. So, guys, this has been fun.
Let's cut.
We've got some great concepts coming up for topics and ideas and things that you're going to want to know about on the show.
But found a great new local SEO resource that I think we should talk about.
Okay, let's do that. And so we also want to hear from you, though. What is it that you are struggling with? Maybe it's hitting publish. Maybe it's coming up with ideas. Maybe it's something we haven't talked about on the show. Want to hear from you? Go to GTD Show. Actually, on Twitter, just tweet us at GTD Show. Yep. You can also email us, show@growthedream.com. You can go to ask.growthedream.com. Type in your question there. You can find Rod on Twitter, Rod_Thompson. There's no P in Thompson.
There really isn't.
Did we mention Marketing Mondays?
We did at
Marketing
the beginning of the
Mondays.
Show. You can find Josh on Twitter at Josh Muccio. And maybe we did. I don't remember. We talked about it before the show.
Yeah, we might have talked about it before. We got to say it on every show. I mean, it's what it is.
Well, you can hear all of our previous Marketing Mondays shows and find them at growthedream.com/show. Yep, even if it's not a Monday. So
that's true.
All right, guys.
Evergreen.
I hope so. Anyway, all right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Have a great one.
Thanks for listening to the Grow the Dream Show. We invite you to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Get connected to our growing community, add your comments, ask questions, and listen to the archives on the web at growthedream.com/show.